you realize that right now is starting the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination.
Yes, that's right, 62. Yes, it is.
63. But the planning for the Kennedy assassination started around this time, in the fall of 62. And so from this point to 63 is a 12-month span, and since the planning is hoping to pull it off, what did they do to make it successful in that 12 months? So any point along those 12 months is the cause or the beginning.
Yes.
And Mao will say this is the beginning of November 22nd, 63.
Very
this
good.
Is the year. This is the moment that then spans out for 12 months till we get November 22nd, 63, and the deed is done. So I thought I'd do something that I've never done, and I should tell you who did it. The structure that was the real causing factor in the early 60s for the Kennedy assassination on the anthropomorphic or human being level, because there also was the effect of television,
yes,
which was another level, and I've talked about that a long time, but it's a little more risky to talk about who did what and point fingers. And so I'm going to say that there's a pentad. There's five people who were the hidden DNA, RNA of this cell. And those five people, according to a little birdie who met me once, actually a red cardinal told me this. So since Gaia is a goddess and knows all, any little representative of Gaia must be telling the truth. So here's what Gaia told me. Gaia said that you had a five-point pentad made up of Jimmy Hoffa, J. Edgar Hoover, Nelson Rockefeller, Curtis LeMay, and a couple of my associates on the Secret Council of Ten. Now, of those five, only one person knew all the people involved, was in the position of knowing what LeMay was up to, what Hoover was up to, what Hoffa was up to, and what my buddies were up to. And that would be Nelson Rockefeller. Now, just to jump ahead, Nelson Rockefeller runs for president in 64. And there's a big swell in the Republican Party around Barry Goldwater to stop Nelson Rockefeller, because some people in the Republican Party knew what Nelson had done, and they were not going to have him be president. And he failed. Barry Goldwater became the candidate. But here's the interesting thing is, why didn't the Republican Party expose Nelson Rockefeller? The reason, and, you know, the considered opinion of a lot of these people, a lot of people in government knew about this action before it was going to happen and all this. And you might want to look at, a lot of people thought that JFK needed killing because he, and some people had figured this out, had murdered Marilyn Monroe. There were some people who were thinking, this guy is out of control. So here you have the situation in 63, 64, whereas if you point at one person or somebody starts to get exposed, it was the considered opinion of the inner committees that civil war would break out in the United States. They decided, well, let's keep this covered up for a while. And that's what I was part of. I was part of the cover-up, disinformation and things and misinformation. They decided that we got to deal with this tragedy of the Camelot vision and all that that meant to the people. That is more bearable than an actual tearing the country apart. So that was a practical decision. Whether it was right or not, that's open to debate, but that's why it had and will continue to be covered up until recently. Now, here's another factor that's interesting. What's the role of Lee Harvey Oswald? And here's the inside information on that. Lee Harvey Oswald was part of the assassination team, but or the group that was telling him to take some shots at Kennedy. And he did this in up in Detroit or Chicago. I think it was Chicago. And he did it in Miami. If you become, you know, really well-versed on the Kennedy assassination, you know there were a few attempts before Dallas. So here's Lee Harvey Oswald, is told to shoot at Kennedy in these two previous cities and not hit him. These are warning shots. And there's different scenarios about what Oswald thought he was protecting or what Kennedy was going awry on and had to be warned about, probably around Cuba and stuff like that. So he took these erroneous shots in Chicago, Miami, and then now he's in the Texas Book Depository building, and he's assigned the same task of not hitting Kennedy. But unfortunately, he did hit him by accident, but it was not the only bullet that hit Kennedy. There was a couple of others, three others, one from the grassy knoll. There also was a shot from the Texas Book Depository building, one floor up from Oswald. Okay, so here's Lee Harvey Oswald. You can have people like Gerald Ford and the Warren Commission say that, and stick to this for decades, that Lee Harvey Oswald, acting alone, killed Kennedy. And they knew that he was there and took shots and actually hit him. So they knew they were right in that point. They could radiate confidence that they knew something that was real, and more than anybody else knew anything, and they would stick to that because they were right. Later, when information came out, oh, other things that nobody knew about comes out, they can say, oh, well, we didn't know that, but we were right about Lee Harvey Oswald. So you have the confidence of Ford and Warren and all these other people that Lee Harvey Oswald was acting alone. But Lee Harvey Oswald knew that he was not trying to kill Kennedy. He made a mistake, or whatever happened, he accidentally shot Kennedy. But he knew that he wasn't supposed to hit him. So that explains his paranoia and saying he was a patsy and all this stuff. So here it is, you have the lone nut thing, as fragile as it is, has a bit of fact in it, yet there's all these other circumstances that show that he couldn't have been the only guy involved in all this. So in that nebulosity, in that confusion, which is really how you run a disinformation campaign, you always have a bit of truth sprinkled all over the place. Nobody ever could totally figure it out, because both sides in the ostensible argument were right.
Why is it that Nelson Rockefeller had that perch to see what the Solar Council was doing and what Hoover and Hoffa and LeMay, and why was it those individuals? Why LeMay? Why was Curtis LeMay in on this?
The person who caused it, really, was J. Edgar Hoover. He's the one who had the motive. He's the one who knew that Marilyn Monroe was murdered. He knew he had that on the Kennedy brothers, and he knew he was going to be fired. So a year before, and you know, you see this in a couple of movies, like maybe JFK, they'll show these meetings between Hoover and Kennedy. As a matter of fact, there was a recent movie I just saw on Hoover, played by Leonardo DiCaprio. In that, they have the meetings of Hoover with Kennedy and with Robert Kennedy. So here's this tension around Hoover, and he knows he's going, and he's not going to go. So Hoover has to figure out what to do. So he took advantage of the Hoffa's Teamsters' paranoia about Hoffa being put away and the incursions into the secret activities of the Teamsters. So now Hoffa and Hoover got something going, and they've got to get a few other institutions on board. So you get the financial, which is really overlapping into the international world. That's the Rockefeller nexus. Then you have the military or CIA or DIA part. And then you have my associates who were always like the watchers in the fringe. The watcher guys know what's going on, and they don't really get involved, but they're observing and actually know what's going to happen. Some of the people that were my seniors in the Secret Council 10 were in that position. These people decided that it was worth knocking out Kennedy. Now, here's another level, which is interesting, is that because television was having such a dramatic effect on the image of power and its history and its legacy, the power positions of the old Orwellian Big Brother world, like Rockefeller, Pentagon, and Hoover, not so much Hoffa, though on the common man level, the Hoffa and the Mafia, they ran the waterfronts, that kind of fear level.
Mm-hmm.
This fear thing that these historical entities could project was being superseded by television. So here's this guy Kennedy in the Rat Pack coming across as having a new kind of discarnate electric disembodied charisma, which no power source had ever accounted for on the level of charisma they thought they had. So there's a collective threat by television. That's why Kennedy was singled out. They saw him as corrupting the television landscape because they knew he was a creep behind the scenes. And here's this guy looking like he's a glowing angel, a surfer boy, and yet they, Hoover and them, see this rot behind him. So they thought that the discarnate image of television had to be connected to the chemical body. They thought there was a connection. But Kennedy's image had nothing to do with the Kennedy chemical body. It was just he had the right image for a television, grainy, early color TV and late black and white, whereas Nixon didn't have that useful image. So I don't want to get too much on that media level because I want to point out the actual people involved, or I've been told were involved. Now, I don't know if any of this is true, all right? I don't know if any of this is true, but it was a pretty reliable Red Cardinal, pretty knowing Red Cardinal told me this. The next point is that we learned from Ion that nobody can die unless they want to. They desire to leave. That's the only way you can die. So every death's a suicide. So where's the suicide in Kennedy? Why would he commit suicide? The suicide was, first of all, he was forced into the White House by his father, as his brother was later, and hated his father for the constrictions and having to be a politician. So he had that problem with his father. And then he had Kennedy himself. He decided, well, if I'm going to be president, I'm going to do something about the Federal Reserve and the Fed and the banking system and the currency. So in February 62, he makes his move to find out what's what and then know that he can make a solid move. Well, in the course of doing that, he finds out that America was not owned by anybody that he thought he could influence. It was owned by the Chinese.
In 62, America was owned by the Chinese?
Yes. It goes back to 1933, and Ion has given us some of this history. Do you remember that Fort Hood massacre a couple years ago with the crazy psychiatrist?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that was about Federal Reserve notes being shipped over to somewheres in trucks. Well, those were the notes that were set up by and involved with China in 33 to get America out of the Depression. So China really got a lock-in in the 30s, and then just sat there on the sidelines watching America twist.
Bob, if we can rewind back into the salient point, and I think you were starting to get into it, as to why JFK had to be eliminated. If you can start there.
Right. I want to say that over the next 12 months, there's going to be all kinds of specials, I assume, about the JFK assassination because it's the magic half-century number, 50th anniversary. They used to do the 25th anniversary, the 30th, the 40th. They're going to be doing something this year a lot, and we are the first to do it. And this information on your show will be the best of all that will be unveiled this year.
Well, I am absolutely honored, Bob, that you are giving us this information and that it's the time that you feel that people are ready to hear it.
That's why when you weren't getting to the station, I started to wonder, uh-oh. I knew what I was going to talk about. I said, those damn ESP guys, they heard it. They've offed Evan and maybe Roy. Maybe Roy's going down too.
Yeah, no. We are here because this is what we're meant to do, is to hook up with the Bobs of the world and bring it forth, sir.
Yes, the forces that were overcome to do this show, it's going to take years for people to fathom. What we did to pull it off so that Evan made it through the traffic, there were at least five factions waiting to snuff you, and you avoided every one of them.
Yes, they didn't know I had this ionic-powered Yaris here.
You had the RNA drops inside you. That's another story. Okay, so I'm explaining why JFK is suicidal. Why is he depressed? Why does he want to die? He's got the familial pressures, got a problem with Jackie, and now he says, well, at least can I do a Lincoln maneuver, Abraham Lincoln, and bring the greenback power back, you know, or to get rid of this lockdown economy involved with international puffery that he felt, and he may not have been right, because the economy might have had to go that way anyways when he got international computer conditions. But anyways, he said, I'm going to fix this thing. And when he found out that there was no America to fix, it was owned by China, this was an incredible shock to him. He realized he was living in a hologram or some kind of virtual reality, and Americans didn't know it. to the degree that economic power is important. It's not important. It didn't stop the Beatles. It didn't stop Zappa. It didn't stop rock and roll and Tim Lehrer and LSD and everything that happened, all the great stuff in the popular culture. You can't stop that. So, you know, what is power? What did China really control? Well, I don't know. It's pretty vague. But when you move to levels of power that Obama thinks he has, you have to think on that historical level, and you come up with these conundrums. How do we fix the economy? Well, it's not our economy anymore. It's China's. So when he realized that he couldn't even accomplish a heroic Abraham Lincoln maneuver, and, you know, he was guilty for what he'd done to get to that position, including offing Marilyn Monroe. So here he is trying to redeem himself, and he can't do it. It's impossible. That will depress a person. That will make them think, it's like the Coppola movie, The Godfather.
Yes.
The high winds of tragedy. You know what I mean? It's just too much for humans to take. So he just went into a suicidal thing, set up the mental attitude, the emotional attitude, the vibration, the frequency to get to leave. He also had terrible back pain.
Yes.
All kinds of problems, just no fun to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so because he set that personal momentum, other factions who would prefer him not to be around for their personal ambitions said, okay, let's get this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're aware that he is receptive to being killed. They're just going to
do the dirty deed.
Other reasons to do it. This is what Ion tells us. It's the non-physical of all of us. It's communicating among ourselves, you know, all 7 billion of us, and calculating these things. So when I'm watching Eben get stuck in the traffic before she gets here, that could be Eben's own non-physical trying to decide, saying, I know what Bob's going to do tonight. I don't know if I want to be part of this. I think I'll get in a little accident here so I don't make it. But the other part of your non-physical overrode that, and you got here. So you see my point, my metaphor is that the non-physical is communicating on levels or scenarios that you physically aren't manifesting. It's not obvious.
But somehow there's a...
There's a bit of a manifestation there going on in weird little things that happen. So the point is that Ion is saying that the guys who wanted to kill Kennedy, their non-physical knew that he had decided to go and was waiting for someone to off him. So he'd have an excuse, so it didn't look like he committed suicide. That's the dialogue among the non-physicals. Hoover's not thinking that. His chemical body's saying, this guy's going to get rid of me, and I can't be gotten rid of. Now, just let me just say at this point so I don't forget, a really good novel that captures what I'm talking about is James Ellroy. He's an L.A. writer. His American Tabloid. It's a beautiful trilogy. American Tabloid, The Cold 6000, and Blood's a Rover. Those three books are what every high school student or American freshman in college should read. If they want to understand American history from 58 to 72 when Hoover dies, that trilogy is better than anything. And he novelizes what I'm talking about.
Okay, so...
real close.
Wow.
It makes Hoover the crux of the matter.
So how is it that somebody like James Ellroy attunes to this? Is this non-physical? How did he come to understand this?
Well, maybe he listened to a lot of Mae Brussel. Maybe he listened to Dr. Beter. Maybe he listened to me. Maybe he listened to Lynn LaRouche. There's all kinds of research that he read the Torbett document. And then also in his own field of, you know, sort of studying the underbelly and the police forces of L.A., there's a lot of knowing people in the L.A. police force, so he could meet and talk to people. And he actually, I don't think I'm giving anything away, but the third book is based on a famous detective in L.A. The character Crutch refers to a guy who actually is and became a friend of James Ellroy's after the first two books came out. And Ellroy, I guess it said, decided to take the Crutch character, the real person, his story, and make it part of the resolution in the third novel.
Let's go back into some of the idea of how China, because we know now, and we're saying now, that we are indebted to China. We've sent them all of our industry, et cetera. But you're saying this goes all the way back to the 40s.
Well, it goes back 150 years. It goes back to Louisiana Purchase and things like that, which involve the Commonwealth of Virginia, which the Royal Family of England still owns, and the deals with the French powers at, you know, at the time of 1800, say, And then you have the wealth of China is known by the elites of Europe, and one of the main figures of that is Saint Germain, which many people say is a mythical figure and didn't exist. Well, yeah, you can have that opinion and change to another channel. But I'll tell you, Saint Germain is a real person, and he's still alive. And so Saint Germain was the representative of the financial debts and dealings that the European powers had developed ever since Marco Polo opened the Silk Road in the 1200s AD, or ACE. See, so it goes back to the opening of China. Now, there's a famous historical point in the 1500s, approximately. China had this huge armada, incredible ships. And they started to sort of move out and go across the Pacific Ocean and into the Indian Ocean and all over the place to see if they should do something out there. And they get as far as Africa, and then the big mystery in historians' perspective is, why did China turn back, not try to conquer anything out there on like a Roman Empire, horizontal empire, withdrew back into China and became kind of irrelevant to the industrial age that started to grow.
Good question.
The Atlantic Ocean cultures. And then they just stayed in retreat. Well, they actually knew, because of their own shamans, 1,000 years before now, they saw that America would become the great country it did become, and in the end would be victorious, would be a fantastic culture. So they started to invest in America in the 1800s, maybe even the 1700s. Isn't it interesting that the gold rush, all that stuff in San Francisco in the 1849, 1850 period, there's a lot of Chinese management and slave work going on there. That's because the Chinese were, in a way, in on the elite that was going to determine what to do with this gold if anything was found. They were part of the mafia committee, so to speak. That's why their presence is so strong in that gold rush. Not for the populist reason that they were just a bunch of dummies that were brought over as slaves. No, they were managers of this whole thing.
I mean, all you hear about, you know, Chinamen working on the railroads.
They built America. Now, look at this. You could say that they built America like the blacks did. And you look back, well, they weren't building it for you or me. They were building it for China.
But what was their investment?
That they knew historically, because they're psychics or whatever you want to call them. There's paintings in China from 1,000 years ago of people with like a Dick Tracy wristwatch, or you call it an iPhone. People talking on little devices in their hands 1,000 years ago. So they saw what the 21st and 22nd century was going to be, which would be the real turning point of human history, the 21st century. This is the century where everything gets something totally different. And now for something completely different. All right?
Okay.
And so they wanted to have a stake in there, the elders, the elite of China. And the oligarchs always plan pretty far ahead, and the Chinese are pretty good at this. So they knew that you couldn't stop the fact that America was going to become the powerhouse it did. And also so much technology and everything comes out of America. They probably figured out that little thing in the guy's hand 1,000 years ago, they said, Jesus, that's Steve Jobs' product. We've got to wait for Steve to show up. We'll stick with Steve. Okay, so they had this, you know, amazing vast vision. So they sat out all the turmoil in Europe, the religious wars, the industrial wars, the civil wars, the First World War and Second World War. They basically sit it out.
Wow.
Why get involved? And they're pretty locked in as a potential owner of the prize, that being America. So what happened at the time of Theodore Roosevelt, which is, you know, like 1900, he becomes president around then? That was the first crisis financially. And so what happens is all that wilderness that the Sierra Club preserves, all that wilderness in America, that was handed over to China. So when you're going through parks in the United States, you're going through property owned by China, which was the first collapse with the Roosevelt administration financially. They didn't have anything. It turns out that America was pretty weak in the big level. It's only a new country, too. It was way weaker than Americans realize. So here they are, vulnerable at 1900, so they have to turn over a lot of their land as collateral. Then the next crisis happens in the 30s with the global economic collapse due to radio and electric environments, which were basically free information,
right,
where everybody could get stuff for free and not have to buy it. If I gave out information, I could keep it and you could have it. It's not like I give you an apple and you eat it and then I don't have an apple.
Right.
The whole electronic software communism that came in with the radio era screwed up the meaning of money. And that's why money became public property in the 30s, known as welfare states or socialist states or the New Deal or fascist states or communist states. That's money as public property. It's not owned by the oligarchs anymore. Okay, so in this crisis of confusion for the American bankers, China saves them. So China gets its further hooks on America through the Federal Reserve notes and the gold deal that was set up by Roosevelt. Now note that the son, whatever he was, relative of Teddy, he's now going to do the next phase. He's going to scarf up all the gold and put it away someplace in Fort Knox. And that's a whole story where that gold went to. That's not in Fort Knox anymore. Now, you can go to informationfarm.blogspot.com, Ed's site, and look under ION, and all the topics we broadcast the last 3 years are presented in alphabetical order in that page called ION. Now, you scan down and look up Nesara, N-E-S-A-R-A. You know about that.
Yeah.
Look up Nesara. Now, you listen to that topic and ION talking about it. And who is the key figure in the Nesara information? I'll tell you, it's Hillary Clinton. And why is it Hillary Clinton? Because her father was the one fully aware of the Chinese dominance in the 60s and 70s, the hidden ground of America. And then a side thing, McLuhan said in the 60s that China was the hidden ground. Very interesting that he would say that. What did he know? Anyway, I didn't have a chance to check him out on that. But he said China was the hidden ground. And he had sociological reasons for saying that. So here is Hillary Clinton's father, coming out of Chicago, knows the obligations of the American economic system to China, and they need money again. Because there was a gold crisis in 1968. There was a currency crisis. Talk to a guy like Sherman Skolnick, he'll tell you about this.
Mm-hmm.
There was a crisis in 68 in the world economy, and America was vulnerable again.
Mm-hmm.
So Nixon had to go to China with his hat in his hand, begging. Okay, what can you help? What can you do for us? You know, we'll give you this. I'll give you my Frank Sinatra record collection. Got all this great culture I'll give you. He went there ostensibly to open China to us. No, he went there with hat in his hand and in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who was the in-between fixer of this relationship was Hillary Clinton's father, which means that Hillary Clinton is going to be pretty close to being a president someday because she's already part of the hidden circle.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what the deal was. The deal was, China says, we want a way of distributing the products that our people are going to start making as we become, quote, capitalists or industrialist people making products. So we want to have some distribution mechanism that we control. So guess what they got? They got Walmart. They set up little old Sam Walton down in Arkansas, right where Hillary was in the law firm. It's interesting if you read Little Roosh's literature, Executive Intelligence Review, and other pretty good journalists, in the sense that they keep their records. They read books.
Yes.
They're one of the few people in America that reads. They read newspapers all over the world. They're a cult of literacy. And they read, and they put it all together on their computers, and they come out with interesting connections like Mae Brussel used to do, because
yes,
Mae read a lot every day. And you can look up the history of Walmart, you know, when LaRouche and them do it, and they know that he was set up by something, but they'll call it British intelligence or the City of London. They don't know, or they'll not admit, and I doubt if they know, they don't know that behind the City of London is China on a broad level, see? But they know that there's some setting up for Mr. Walton. Okay, so Walmart then becomes this huge powerhouse in the era that China becomes a huge powerhouse, let's say since 1990. And it's because the digital environment, the digital electronic transparency, is removing all the layers of the onion so that the guys who actually do own the last vestiges of gold, credit, and currency are standing there with their clothes off and totally visible.
Mm-hmm.
So China never rose and just sped ahead because it was big population or whatever. It got revealed
That it was
all guys with any power.
That it was already there.
It's already there.
So we basically are still trying to pay them back.
Yes, right. And they are being real careful because they can't collapse America because then they lose their investment.
Right.
So they're caught in a powerless position the way everything is so interdependent. They can't really push the whole thing and make the Bush family, the Clinton family, or whatever, give in to this situation because Bush and the Clintons just walk around on the TV landscape pretending there's an America and strut a boat because they know China doesn't want to rock the boat where everything falls apart. So this is where power becomes nothing. It's a technological interdependency that's very sophisticated, and it's fun to look and understand, and the best book that shows this is Finnegan's Wake. It's the best psychological document, sociological, chemistry, genetic stuff, physics. It's got it all in there. And Joyce, he half-channeled it, so to speak, and he let language do the talking.
If America was to collapse, what happens to China?
They lose their investments. So America's not going to collapse.
Aren't they in Africa?
They're all over the place. They're in Mexico, everywhere. They're doing what the Rockefellers are doing in the 60s and 70s. Through AID, Rockefeller would send out the welfare money all over the world. And then he got caught in the late 70s with the oil crisis and the speeding up of the digital economy that they couldn't bring the loans, debts back in. And everything collapsed in the late 70s for the Rockefellers. So China is like the new Rockefellers, handing out the medium of money and industrial structure, but it's, most of it's really digital. They're the only ones doing it around the world.
Hi, caller one. Welcome.
Bob, were you involved in the assassination of JFK? And if so, how does that relate to the other stuff you're talking about?
If you read my diaries, I knew Hoover since the 50s. And if you go look up my diary entry for about 1954 and see what I say to Hoover, I give away and tell you what the peccadillo of Hoover was in his resentment of the Kennedys. Hoover had a thing about the Catholics. He was not going to allow the Catholics take over America for whatever perverse Protestant reason he had or Freemasonic reason. And that is the personal thing that he had against the Kennedys, besides all the other technical bureaucratic problems. He thought there was a Catholic conspiracy against America. So you can read that in my diaries, and you can find out who I talked to. Anyways, there's really interesting diary entries in 64 and 65 after the Kennedy assassination. Basically, there's one where I'm whipping down Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue with David Ferry, and we're listening to a great song, Crying. Anyways, yeah, we'll get lost with that. So back to here. My role was, since I was not a CEO level, I was just a working guy on the level of a James Bond, you could say. Do you know that the James Bond movies are totally about the solar government? It's always about some Rumpelstiltskin that's going to hijack the whole planet.
Yes.
And bypass the superpower detente. Anyway, so that's what the Secret Council 10 was. But we actually were on the watch out for nouveau Rumpelstiltskins, nouveau hijackers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what I did in the Kennedy assassination after was encourage the dissemination of different kinds of books and the confusion. We encouraged, you know, the pro-low nut guys, the anti-low nuts. We created a whole range of publishing and making the JFK conspiracy an industry. So I met all those people, and that's how I became a friend of Mae Brussel. So my role was part of the disinformation. I wasn't at Dealey Plaza. You know why we did it, Scott? We did it so there would be no civil war. That was our rationale. We thought we were doing the right thing.
Where would the civil war erupt if JFK continued?
You mean if he stayed alive?
Yes.
No, there wouldn't have been a civil war. He would have implemented, you know, crudely, maybe the civil rights and the things that did happen anyways under LBJ, but all those legislative maneuvers would be obsolesce by the effects of computers, the effects of the digital media in general that has happened to America, the wiping away of America on so many levels. Nobody, no politician, no Congress can stop that. And the people know this. They know these jokers have no influence on what's affecting everybody's working life,
so
economic life.
So did RFK, Robert F. Kennedy, also have a suicide mission?
Yes. He was underneath his father's specter. Joseph Kennedy is a big factor in this.
Yeah.
And some of the other his close relatives decided to facilitate that.
What do you mean, some of his closer relatives?
Is Ethel still alive? Yes. She's still alive. Okay. And Ethel's a very nice person. Very nice person. Nothing to do with the Kennedy assassination. She's still alive, you know? Okay, so let's move on to another topic.
Okay, can't talk about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Talk about Fort Hood. How does that wrap in?
You have Hillary running around as Secretary of State. She did not want to be president. That's the worst position to be. Look at the Republicans. They didn't want to win this thing, so they put a joker in, and he might have thought it was worth doing, but he eventually started looking real confident a couple of weeks before the election, and everybody thought that he was being confident because he was going to win, and he thought he was winning. No, he was confident that he was going to lose, and he was happy. He didn't want to be president. He wanted to be Secretary of State or something. That's where he can get the business deals going. So Hillary Clinton is running around in this period of tension between China and the United States over what these stupid, spastic, lettered Americans are going to do in the cloud computing world, because they can't get adjusted, and China knows they've got the sensibility. So here's Hillary, whose father was involved in setting up Nixon and Walmart and everything that has held the secret deals together, in a crisis. And where was she the week of Fort Hood? She's over getting beat up in North Korea. You look it up. She's over there running around arguing with North Korea, which is the front for China. So Hillary is in the middle of this crisis. And in that crisis, where basically the Clinton guys are reneging on the obligations of paying back what the Chinese are owed and whatever economic thing is necessary at this point. And this leads into 9-1-1, too. Things were due in 2000. Well, that's the Nasara point. These people who go on about the Nasara history are right about what happened in 2000 up to a point. They don't know the bigger picture, but they know something was due, and Clinton reneged on it.
Yes.
President Clinton. So here's China hacking everybody, hacking the Treasury, hacking the Fed. You might remember these stories in 2009 and 10. And in the middle of it, China says, well, the hell with it. We're going to just go over there and get those bills and papers that show that we do this, and we're just going to grab them. So they walked into Fort Hood, shot up some people, and took the documents that were over here, as opposed to the documents that China had. They needed both. You got to understand, even though the Chinese have this, you know, savoir faire about what's going on, they're still subject to the confusion of the digital environment anyways.
Right.
Everybody
right.
is. No culture can handle the wonderful autonomy and almost simulated godhood that the digital media creates for young people.
So, Bob, how is it for the military that were present at the shooting, how is it that they do not and they aren't able to recreate or say what happened at that event, that it wasn't this lone shooter? How is it that this story gets redrafted, kind of like what you had to do for JFK? How does it that it becomes redrafted with so many eyes on site?
Because the level I'm talking about will never be admitted to.
Okay.
When I was talking about it on Chief Radio and giving out this information, we got a call from some major senators who told us that we got to stop talking about that. They tried to intimidate us. And they said, we'd actually do something against you guys, but you guys are so nutty and funny that nobody's going to take you seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But we personally object to you discussing the hidden history of China. That was said to us. Okay, so any important scandal, if it remains unresolved, but yet the people know something weird was going on, none of it makes sense, we're witnessing it right now with Mr. Petraeus resigning.
Petraeus,
right?
Yeah. What do you see about that? Petraeus.
Well, the battle between media dynamics is always what the battle over the White House is. And I've done this before in your show, went back through the last 50 years and explained. For example, Watergate was a battle between the newspaper and television for the advertising dollar. The newspaper was so on the sidelines, they decided to create a problem around Watergate, and that's the Washington Post and the New York Times, against the TV reality, CBS and that Nixon could control. Okay, what is the media dynamic here? You've got Web 2.0 coming to its end now. It's an established fact that everybody enjoys, Facebook, My Page, YouTube, everything that everybody can do, have billions of websites and go on Reddit and all these different places and have fun in an autonomous way. Like, why even bother going to movies? I'll make my own movies. You know, why do this? Why make record? I'll do it. And so all the major analog entertainment industries are always in crisis the last 10 years. So that's Web 2.0. And as we moved into Web 3.0, which is something different, and I would say cloud computing, whatever you imagine cloud computing is, think of that as Web 3.0.
Right.
That is creating a whole new war on many levels for major power companies that were in dominance in the Web 1.0 and Web 2.0 phase. Mm-hmm. So what is the imagery of battle in media terms we just witnessed? Obama is the nostalgic figure. He's the guy that represents that yearning for human scale that the Occupy Wall Streeters represented a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Occupy Wall Street was nostalgia for the connecting and networking that Web 2.0 created,
mm-hmm.
versus the scary thing where everybody goes into their Matrix tube even more extremely, like in the Neo and Morpheus in the Matrix movies, where he thinks he's living in New York City. This is Web 3.0 coming in. So there was a nostalgia for Web 2.0 networking and connecting. And so the Web 2.0 guy, that image remained strong. That's Obama. What is Romney? Romney's not an image of the past, of the right wing or the neoconservative or old-fashioned values. He represents Web 3.0, the frantic, desperate move to make interconnectivity a network to get yourself into a position of being a god. A techno god. And that's why his graspingness, you know, he was the guy sweating. He really wanted the job. He didn't want the job of the presidency. He wanted to have networking pay off that he had developed when he was governor.
Yes.
And so here the election on one level never happened because nothing changed. And the factor that influenced the vote, they say, young people, blacks, Hispanics, weren't even in the game when all the billions were being thrown around for the campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
And they just rose up and toppled the whole analog media political structure.
Right.
So they kept their guy in because they're nostalgic for Web 2.0.
Right.
And Romney, the other aspect of the election never happened. It has not ended.
Mm.
And immediately, the networking specter of people desperately trying to connect to create a cabal that has some influence is represented by Paula Broadwell and Jill Kelly.
Hmm.
They're continuing the election as Romneyites, frantically trying to network with obsolete structures like the Pentagon. And so Petrus gets caught in the crossfire. Now, that's on the media level of the chip body and TV body. Then there's the chemical body level, where somebody's being killed for this reason or that reason over bank accounts. And that's the level that they're not going to talk about. It's like China is saying, we don't want Obama for another term. And if he's going to be in here again, then we're going to put our CIA director in.
Yeah, I always thought, it's like, hold it, this guy is being kicked out for consensual sex, adultery, and the CIA actually says adultery is fine by us. We do it all the time.
Yeah, everybody does. There are no families anymore.
Yes.
Well, what family values are being preserved?
Right.
And for a majority of Americans, there's not that value. So he obviously is faking it on that level for the TV language, but he's under other kinds of pressures. And maybe working for the Chinese and resigning so that his buddy gets in and he's still on the same side.
So what do you think of Clinton? Hillary Clinton has walked away from the Secretary of State. What do you read into that maneuver?
The Chinese don't need whatever her family had done for them. She's obsolete.
But you're saying she's going to be the next president, though.
I said that when in the early 70s, she was in the groove to, in the circuitry and the connections to become part of that level of American society at some level, senator, president, and she got there. And she, remember, she was first lady for 8 years.
Right.
She already did it.
Right.
But it's a different world. The White House isn't important anymore.
I'm wondering about the resiliency of the House of Windsor.
Very strong, very strong.
Yeah, somebody had told me that a model was having a little shindig with Prince Andrew. And Prince Andrew had said to this model that they had a divine right to rule because their blood was mixed with something other, that he actually got into what David Icke had speculated about, that there is some kind of, he didn't say reptilian.
Icke's got it confused. It refers to the Lemurians. The Lemurians are an actual species here on the planet. And they were down in the Polynesia area 2,000 years ago. and the Roman ships chased them off Easter Island in that area, so they were forced to go into Asia and start to mingle with, you know, our kind of species, civilizations. And they have moved into positions of influence a lot all over the last history, but they're not vicious enemies of us. They just have talents that, you could say they're psychic. Say a talent like that, and
right.
So they know what's going on that their fellow humans don't know, and so they can get an advantage. There have been Lemurians in high places, so they're not reptilians from another planet. They're an actual species. They're different. The biggest secret of the 20th century is the role of the Queen Mother in World War II and how she whooped Europe and put it all together because of what she did. That movie, what's it called? The King's Speech.
Yes.
The movie makers knew or intuited the role of Queen's mother, but they aren't allowed to talk about this. So they made a story about her husband just to sort of make people aware of her. She is shown in the movie to be the backbone of the structure of the of him. He's a weak guy, and
okay.
He needs her. So the point is that the Queen Mother became so powerful that you can't topple that house. Remember the movie 2012 a couple of years ago?
Yes.
Remember everybody gets on the boat and they try to get off the planet or whatever?
Right.
Who walks on that boat? The Queen Elizabeth with a little dog, if you remember. She paid the $1 billion to get on the boat. Remember that? They showed the Queen Elizabeth, gee, whatever's going to happen, whatever it costs, she'll have the money to handle it.
Okay.
Now, they had a bit of a crisis in 20 years ago, and that's the old Secret Council 10 battles. But she's doing pretty good.
Yes.
And thanks to her mother.
So what is it about the Queen Mom that makes her so, does she have Lemurian blood, a psychic? Is she able to do something phenomenal?
Yeah,
she was able
to do something. She was able to go to parallel worlds.
What do you mean?
Well, in World War II, the British had no money, no nothing. They were in trouble against the fascists, no resources. And then the Queen Mother tapped into her ability to go to another world, and she brought a lot of wealth over, a lot of gold. And all of a sudden, Balmoral Palace had all the power. And then people could start being paid to do things for Britain. Up to that point, why work for Britain? They got no money. I'll work for Hitler. Work for Mussolini. Work for the people who've got some wealth. But she retrieved huge wealth and saved your ass, Eben.
So, if I'm hearing this correctly, for one, she knew about the existence of parallel worlds.
Yes. She just could go over in the other world. And so she just brought over huge bars of gold from the other world and built up the coffers at Balmoral Palace.
Did she have to leave anything in collateral for that gold?
Well, she had to put a lot on Depot Street in New York City. If you remember a couple of years ago when Queen Elizabeth was up in Toronto, and all of a sudden, there was a storm, and she couldn't make the public gathering, so she zipped down to New York City. Well, she had to go down and check out what was going on in Depot City, because all of these powerhouses, let's call them the old principalities, they're all subject and weakened by the digital utopia of endless information and experience that you can imbibe and drink through your digital technology that obsolesces every old form of wealth. They're all weakened, even China. And this is the dramatic thing that the people can see. If they can see what I'm saying, they don't have to worry about these old powerhouses. They aren't as strong as your little iPhone.
What?
Start taking RNA drops so that you don't have to eat as much and sleep as much and you're feeling great and your cells are being rebuilt and you're getting new cells. Nobody can whip you. You'll be here a lot longer than the Queen. But the Queen knows what we're doing and she probably takes RNA drops.
Yeah, but I think she has some now, right?
Yes, I mean, I know the Queen, so they know what we're doing. They like ions. They understand the role of ions. The newest technology is ion. Ion is a technology.
We talked a little bit about the House of Windsor. Is there anybody that stands at her level in any of the other oligarchies?
No, she's the strongest family of all. The Turner taxes went down. Gloria Turnitax just hangs out with the present pope, and she's weak. She's got a few castles, and that's it. The Rockefellers are gone. The Rothschilds are gone. The Warburgs are gone. The Romanovs are gone in Asia. That's not the Russian Romanovs. Another bunch of people.
Right.
The only people that are equal, there's a few quadrillionaires. There's 31 quadrillionaires in the world, and one of them's in Taiwan, and a Chinese person here and there. The Queen's not a quadrillionaire. She's a trillionaire, so she's not the top, but of Western dynasties, she's the top, but she's not the top in the world.
Fantastic. Bob, how friggin' great. Thank you so much. This was definitely...
Happy Thanksgiving. Happy November 22nd.
Yes.
All of the Ion stuff and all my stuff is going to be streaming on Achieve Radio in a couple of weeks.
Great. Okay, Bob, till soon.
All right.
All right. Bye. Bye.